Well, it's 4:01, and we'll start the Budget and Finance Committee meeting of April 16, 2024. Hey, those that are here, and I guess Joyce, you're online, so nice to have you there. So, thank you. We just have roll call, please?
Commissioner LeMay, Commissioner Garland,
here.
Commissioner Miller, he's been excused today. Vice Chair Carr?
Here.
Chair Mason?
Here. Okay, we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance. There's no call to the audience, so we'll proceed to the staff liaison report. Mr. Gibbard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, commissioners. Just a couple items for you this evening. We continue to be extremely busy trying to wrap up the town manager's recommended budget, as you can imagine. Expect distribution later this month on that, so that is coming. At last council meeting, the town council approved replacing the bridge at the Push Ridge Golf Course, hole 7, and they approved utilizing community center reserves to accomplish that. So that was passed. And then tomorrow night's meeting, just a few items of note on the agenda that I'll hit on. There's a review of the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve Master Plan, so that's coming back before council. There's a funding of a replacement shade structure at Steam Pump Ranch that was hit by a motorist, and so that item, really an unexpected replacement and repair of that item. And then we'll be reviewing the town's agreement with Visit Tucson, so that is also on the agenda tomorrow evening. And that concludes my comments this evening. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Melissa, could you do item one, please?
Agenda item number one, the review and approval of the March 19, 2024 regular session meeting minutes.
Are there any questions or comments on the minutes? Okay, do I have a motion to approve?
I move to approve.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to approve from Commissioner Vice Chairman Carr and a second from Commissioner Garland. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Passes unanimously. Could you go on to item number two, please?
Agenda item number two, presentation and possible discussion of the town's fiscal year 2023-2024 financial update through February 2024.
Hello? Okay. Good afternoon. I'm just going to walk you through the highlights for the February financials, and then we'll take any questions that you guys have. So, starting with the general fund, overall, through February, year to date, revenues are up 7.4%. This is due to local sales tax growth, primarily in retail, remote seller, and restaurant and bar, as well as a little bit of license and permits, interest income, and of course the AMRRP rebate that we've mentioned before. General fund revenues are expected to end the year 2.3% above budget for the mentioned reasons. State shared revenues are forecasted to be slightly under budget just due to the vehicle license tax. It's coming in a little under what we expected. For the expenditures in the general fund, they are within budget and expected at the end of the year under budget, just due to some personnel savings that are expected. In the highway fund, overall year to date, revenues are up 3.2% from the prior year. That's due to just our HERF dollars and income interest. We expect to end the year 1.6% above budget, again, due to interest and a little bit of insurance recoveries. Expenditures in the highway fund are within budget, and we are expecting slight personnel savings, so a little bit under budget expected to end the year. And finally, in the community center fund, overall year to date, the revenues are up 12.3% from the prior year. That's just due to our contracted golf operations, which are up 19%, and town operations, which are up about 25%. Community center revenues are expected to end the year about 8.8% above budget. Again, just due to both golf and town operations. Our local sales tax in the community center fund are performing as we expected. They're up 4% from the prior year. We did adjust the year-end estimate up a little bit just due to remote seller and retail, trending a little bit better than we expected. We also brought down facility rental revenue just a little bit, just due to trending on that. On the expenditure side, no real changes from our last report. We do expect personnel to go over a little bit, as well as contracted golf personnel to go over a little bit. That's going to be offset by carryover and capital, so a few projects that aren't expected to take place this year, so we're going to carry forward in next year. Usually when our golf operations are doing really well, that comes with higher expenditures, cost of sales, especially on the food and beverage side. So, but overall, golf is expected to perform better than originally budgeted, just a little bit of a loss versus a bigger loss. So with that, we'll open up, take any questions.
Do you have any questions? All quiet. Very good. Thank you very much. Melissa, could you go to item number three, please?
Item number three, agenda and possible recommendation of draft public safety personnel retirement system, PSPRS, pension funding policy for financial year ending June 30th, 2025.
Well, hopefully we can get our presentation pulled up here. Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. A draft policy is before you this evening. Just some highlights from it. Basically, what we're proposing is really a shift in how the policy, a fundamental shift in how the policy is constructed. A lot of the same verbiage and language exists that carries over from the prior year, or the current year, I should say, policy. But the shift really occurs on the funding side. And in the current policy, what that funding mechanism looks like is we've got a normal cost rate that the actuaries calculate. And then there's an additional fixed amount that is proposed for the current year of $2.5 million in excess contributions to try to keep us at 100% funded moving forward. The shift, to explain it in a nutshell, is really to try to not have peaks and valleys in that excess funding. So I think in the current policy we were saying we would try to hit 110% funding ratio, and once we hit that, then we could actually dial back those excess contributions. The change that's proposed this evening is that we're really trying to take what the actuaries calculate as your normal cost rate out of the actuarial report, and then set a baseline or compare that normal cost rate from the actuarial report and any sort of unfunded liability amortization. So taking that total cost rate out of the actuarial report and comparing it to the ASRS rate that we pay for our general service employees. That ASRS rate
currently is about it's split 50-50. So total, it's about 24.28%. I believe that's actually for next year. That's next year's rate. So about 14.14% split equally between the employer and the employee. So really looking at it from a total percentage standpoint, comparing, okay, what are we paying total for ASRS and, you know, for employer and employee, and then comparing that for the total contribution to PSPRS and saying, okay, what's, you know, is it greater than what the actuaries are calculating? If it is, then that becomes our baseline. If it's less than, then we're going to utilize what the actuaries recommend as the baseline. And then additionally to that, we've run some different scenarios because we did, and I think this was mentioned a couple meetings ago, but we did fall back from 102% funding ratio down to 95% funding ratio. So we really wanted to address that issue as well. And so what I've done is I've got a couple slides here showing a couple different scenarios that I'd like to run through. Hopefully we can get those pulled up, and I'll explain those to you. Do we have those? Just bear with us just for a second.
Does the other AHR, does it have a unfunded liability amount? Or because I know you paid some money on it, so it took it up to, I think, 100%. So the current rate, that does not include any type of amortization of the unfunded liability.
Mr. Chair, can you repeat that question? Are you talking about the PSPRS or the ASRS?
The ASRS.
Yeah.
Since that we're using that ratio of 24 whatever percent, does that include a unfunded liability amortization?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I don't believe that it does. And I actually sat on a call with Paul Mattson, who's the director at ASRS, last month, and basically, because I was asking him, okay, what's your funding ratio? And I think they're down in the low 70s right now, 72-73%, but they don't anticipate that they don't view that as a problem. They've got a wide base of support, obviously throughout the state to draw that from and to make that up. I don't believe that there is any sort of amortization of unfunded liability that is included in that rate. They say that, you know, his message was, we keep our rates very stable purposefully. And again, we think that through the investment markets, et cetera, we're just not that concerned about the funding ratio for ASRS. With that said, they do have a program. We will be taking a look at that. That was the reason why I was on that call, was to kind of look at their program for pre-funding and catching up even on that side. But that is not proposed for you this evening. That was just an aside. Do we have that presentation? Okay, it looks like it's getting pulled up. Okay, so again, let me run through these scenarios for you, and I'll explain why there's two of them that's presented. So, just bear with me for a sec. I need my glasses. I apologize. We're dealing with small numbers here. I tried to make them as large as possible, but I'm still going to have difficulty reading them without my cheaters on here. So, the first scenario, basically what you see before you is kind of that, and this is utilizing the modeler that's put out by the plan, and it's the most recent modeler. And it just literally came out, I want to say the first or second week of, or no, third week of March. So I think it was right after our meeting last month. The modeler came out, and so I kind of started playing around with some different scenarios. So this one has the assumed earnings rate at 7.2%. And then, so you can see there that first year, 2024, that's the current year, fiscal year that we're in, you see the additional $2.5 million in contributions there.
And then in additionally, in out years, you see about $800,000 for the next, I want to say, 4 years there represented of additional contributions. With this scenario, again, this is utilizing all of our information. So it's got our unfunded actuarial liability. It's all current. And this next slide here, if it Okay, there we go. This next slide here kind of shows what the impact of those additional contributions are. So you can see I included an arrow on that top graph in the upper left quadrant there, the estimated funded ratio. The dotted line really represents if there were no, that's kind of the baseline scenario, if there were no excess contributions. The red line assumes that there are excess contributions. And you see there that our we get to 100% funded there where the arrow kind of points up to the red line there. I believe that's in year 2027, if I can read that right. So about 3 years out with $800,000 per year in excess contributions, we get there at 7.2 assumed earnings rate again. We get there in about 3 years, hit that 100% threshold again. The bottom there shows just kind of the estimated employer contributions over that same time frame that's represented on the upper left quadrant there. So you can see, again, the dotted line would show, you know, assuming that we made $800,000 in additional contributions, it shows it's, you know, higher than the red line there. And so you can kind of see the impact on that. And then on the right side there, you can see what the difference is between the current, which assumes no additional contributions, in our alternate scenario, which assumes the $800,000 for about 4 years, four years. So is, you know, you see the alternate there, and what the difference in total cost, estimated total cost, is to the town, and so that's represented there. On the top, you see the estimated total contributions of employer contributions paid. On the bottom there, you see the present value of those estimated employer contributions. Okay, so that's scenario one. And I'll say, when you look back, so PSPRS, their assumed earnings rate used to be 7.5%. They decreased it a few years back to 7.3, and then I think a couple years ago they actually reduced it again to 7.2. And if you look back historically, they are hitting that 7.2 over the long run. They are hitting that 7.2% benchmark. So I think that is a good target for them. ASRS, as a comparison, they use 7%, so it's a little bit lower. And again, talking with their director, he attributed their funding ratio or funded ratio to the 7%, that it is really conservative, and that's why he feels confident that they're going to make that up over time, that it's just a very conservative assumed earnings rate used by ASRS. PSPRS, again, 7.2. And they are hitting that over the long term. So I think that's a reasonable rate for them moving forward. Now, scenario two. Because the modeler, we talked about the primary reason a couple meetings ago, we talked about the primary reason why we went from 102% funded down to 95% funding was really due to the police, the new police pay scale and the wage increases that were awarded to our police officers. But there's not really a way for us currently. They're working on this on the modeler, but there's not a current way for us to really adjust for that if you award higher raises than what they anticipate, and that causes your liability then to increase. So what I did was I said, okay, well, I had the 2002 modeler, which was the 2022 modeler, which was the prior year. And I said, okay, based upon the 2022 modeler, I know I can't adjust for an increase in wages, but maybe I can adjust for that assumed earnings rate and see what it would take for me to go from 102% funded down to 95% funding. So really trying to get back to that difference moving forward, but doing so through the assumed earnings rate calculation
versus the increase in payroll calculation. So kind of hitting the same target there in terms of overall liability funding, but doing so in a different manner. So that's why I did this scenario and included that. And that the rate that that I needed to change it to was 6.5%. So as I dialed that down on the alternate scenario to 6.5%, that took me from 102% funding to 95 in the 22 modeler. And then I thought, okay, well, let's use all of our current 2023 information and dial that down to 6.5%. And let's see what's necessary moving forward, because the idea here is that what if we continue to award higher pay raises than what the actuaries anticipate or assume, then we would want to build in some sort of cushion or adjust for that on the from a contribution standpoint. And so that's really what this scenario two is attempting to accomplish. And you see there, instead of 4 years of $800,000 in additional contributions, it really stretches out to 8 or 10 years of additional contributions at $800,000. So that's what's necessary. And then, but all the other inputs there are the same. And then you see here the estimated funding ratio, again, looking at it from the current situation to the alternate. The alternate includes those excess contributions. We get back up to 100% funding, I believe, in 2034 is what the model shows there. Again, that arrow kind of shows that. Any questions on the model or the modeler and these two scenarios, or why we're presenting them this evening? Hopefully everything's clear, but I just want to pause here before I move forward.
Do you have any questions, Joyce?
Yes, I do. David, I can see what you're doing here with the modeler, and I think that's a great start. A couple questions. In the policy, you mentioned that you would use what you currently pay to ARS, and then that would be what you would pay to PSPRS. Could you give an example of that? If you were to use fiscal year 24 numbers, what would that look like?
That's a good question. I may have to grab my computer because I've got a spreadsheet as to what that might look like. Just give me a second. I'll grab my computer, Joyce. Okay. I'll respond to that in a second. Hold on.
I guess I just look at it a little bit simply and want to understand then what the dollars would be.
Let me log in here. Okay, so when we compare them, they're actually really similar. So the base, the ASRS base, the total employer contribution, if we were going to utilize that as the baseline, the employer contribution piece of that would be a little over $1 million. So $1,045,054. So almost $1,050,000.
So on the policy that you've written, is that saying then you would pay to PSPRS at least $1 million?
Yes.
And then an additional 800?
Yeah, Commissioner Garland, that's correct. Yes, that would be right, because that would be above and beyond what's recommended. So the ASRS base, again, mm-hmm. Because you have to factor in, what I'm doing there is I'm factoring in, there's a 7.65% employee contribution in PSPRS. So 24.28% is the total contribution less the 7.65% gets you to about 16.63% employer contribution for ASRS. But and then if you compare that to the actuarial valuation, what the actuaries recommend for next year is 16.22%. So it is higher, slightly.
Okay. All right. So you would use the baseline of ARS and then do an additional 800.
Yeah, and that 800,000, what that equates to roughly is roughly about 14%. So you're getting to about total employer funding would be about 30% versus where we've been historically has been upwards over 42-43%.
Yeah, and you really dropped it considerably when you put additional dollars in. My second question then, David, is the scenario part of, and I know we're not on the 5 years projection, but is that part of the projection, that additional 800,000?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, yes, we did include that in the 5 year forecast that'll be presented later this evening.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. Good questions.
So just, so you're saying that we will pay our normal cost plus any amortized unfunded if there is any, which that equates to the 16.2% that we paid, is it last year? And then in addition, instead of paying our $2 million, we're going to pay an additional $800,000.
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, members of the commission, what we're trying to do, again, is really level this out a little bit, so we're not going to see peaks and valleys, and also take more of a percentage. Now I realize that those percentages do equate when you apply them to payroll to extra contributions, but really take more of a percentage based approach to the policy rather than a fixed hard dollar amount approach to the policy.
Well, I guess one question I have about that, the sheet that's in the PSPRS actuarial one that shows how much, if you give an additional amount, what percentage of increase. I have the old one. I don't have a copy of the new one, but it was basically for every $1 million, it was about a 1% increase in the funding ratio. And when we started out trying to raise our funding ratio, you know, the money we were throwing in before we did all the bond proceeds really wasn't gaining us much, very much, maybe a little bit. So I guess my concern there, if we're only given $800,000 in addition, you know, I see what you're saying here, and it kind of shows that we'll get there. But if you look at this sheet here, it kind of gives you doubt if we will get there because we're not given enough. I mean, that's assuming that we don't have – if we didn't have an unfunded if we were 100% or above, obviously the 800,000 would be fine, but it would, dropping down like we are, going by what's in PSPRS, even we were given $1 million, whatever, we weren't reaching it. So what are we doing here that makes us think if we're just doing 800,000 that we're going to get there?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I think what you're going to see here is that this is a closed plan, and so the issue that we're the issue is not necessarily the additional payroll moving forward, especially as you get further out, because we're going to have more drops and more retirements. And once you have a drop or a retirement, that really fixes the liability for our currently employed public safety staff. So I think what you're going to see, the issue is not necessarily moving forward, especially in the out years. It's not going to be the increase in payroll. It's going to be the decrease in time that you have to amortize to be 100% funded by 2036. And that's really what the target is. That's kind of a target, and it's arbitrary, but it's kind of a target that's set by PSPRS, the plan, and really statewide. It's kind of something that has been proposed by the legislature as being the target for the policy. So the amortization is really based upon that premise that you will be 100% funded by that year. So again, every year that
every year that you keep moving down this path, you lose a potential year of amortization, which can have a significant impact. So to me, that's almost the larger issue, is just making sure that we stay on track and on path moving forward. And I think what you're going to see in the model, hopefully, is that, number one, just because the raises have been a little bit larger due to inflation and some different things, factors, last year or current year and moving forward, maybe into next year and maybe the year after that, that hopefully will, once inflation does kind of recede a little bit, that hopefully will kind of tamp down a little bit. So we'll get closer to what the actuaries, what their models show in terms of overall payroll growth for the town. So I'm hoping that issue kind of resolves itself over time. It's currently kind of an issue, but then, we're continuing again, the model, our 5-year forecast, continuing to include more contributions even than what the actuaries recommend that would bring us to 100% funding by 2036. So they're recommending our total rate of 16.22%. That equates to, just bear with me for a second. I'll tell you what that equates to in terms of extra contributions. So about $334,000 in dealing with that unfunded actuarial liability, again, assuming that it's going to be paid off by 2036. This is their proposal, and then we're going to do an additional $800,000 on top of that. So I think we ought to be pretty safe there, just to address your concern.
I mean, that's the kind of direction we'll go in if that's what you want to do. It just seems like, well, when we were doing it based on the 43, we had an unfunded liability amount there that we were contributing to, the same as the $300,000 this time, but we were adding, we added that $500,000 before, mm-hmm. which really didn't cause a blimp, partly, and then even with a, so I guess we'll just see how it goes.
Yeah, I think Mr. Chair, the difference there again is when you added a $500,000 extra contribution on an annual basis to a much lower asset value, you're right, it didn't really register because the earnings on that $500,000 just wasn't that great, and you were already so underfunded that you just could never catch up. We are a lot closer. That's the difference, is we're a lot closer to 100% funded. We've got a much larger asset base now to work from, and so these extra contributions really should be impactful. I anticipate that they'll be impactful. Now, probably not going to get us to where we want to be in 2 or 3 years. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. It all depends on investment markets and factors that are out of our control. But we will know that we're not going to fall way behind. We're not going to continue to dig the hole deeper and deeper. And we're going to continually make progress towards achieving that 100% funding as quickly as possible without having a massive budgetary impact in the near term.
Any more questions?
One more question. David, do you know if PSPRS is going to or considering additional assumption changes?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, I don't believe that they are. They were the assumption change. I have not heard any inclination that they're taking a look at the assumed earnings rate again and trying to dial that down. Now, if they did that, that would have an impact on the unfunded actuarial liability and future contributions. But I've not heard that. The issue that they've been dealing with most recently has been the payroll growth assumption. And I believe that they were trying to dial that down in 0.5% increments. They were at 3.5. The most recent actuarial valuation has it, and even the model has it down. I can show you where you see that is the 2%. You see it it's right after you see the closed 14 years, that 2%. That's the overall payroll growth. Now, it's different from as I understand it, that's a different assumption, and we can't really play with that assumption, but that's a different assumption from the raises that it caused us to go from 102 to 95. And that assumption is further down that payroll growth assumption. It says 0%. That's where you can see that they're trying to add that, incorporate that into the model. But where it says layered, five phase or something, even with my cheaters, I'm having difficulty reading that. But right above where it says yes, that's where they're trying to allow organizations to deal with payroll raises that are awarded to current employees and play with that a little bit and have that factor into the model. But the overall, the ultimate payroll growth there of 2%, that one they were dialing it down in 0.5% increments. I thought, I heard at one point they were going to try to get down to zero. The last I heard it was they were comfortable with 2% there. So I don't think that they're going to monkey around with that percentage moving forward.
All right, thank you.
So I have two questions based on you saying that potentially we want to match PSPRS to the ASRS 24%. So, and I don't need exact numbers, but just approximately how many people are in PSPRS as opposed to ASRS?
I'm going to toss that question to our deputy finance director. I think she actually can pull that up a little bit quicker than I can.
Just a minute, I can pull that up. And can you clarify, are you looking for just tier one PSPRS or all tiers, all active PSPRS?
Probably all. I'm just trying to get an idea of, okay, half of our people are in ASRS and half are on PSPRS, just to get an idea of, how big one is compared to the other.
Perfect. Okay, just 1 minute. Okay, Chair Mason, members of the commission, it looks like we currently have 94 active employees that are contributing to PSPRS through payroll. And ASRS, and that is all tiers of the plan. And then let me pull up ASRS here. I wish I had all these deduction codes memorized, but I don't. And we have 238 employees contributing to ASRS.
Since you got the figures here, just one question, Wendy.
Sure.
What percentage of the police are tier two and three? Do you have that?
Yes, I can pull that up separately if you'll bear with me. We've got, the tier three is growing. It was, obviously not a whole lot of folks initially, but tier one, 30 employees out of those 94. And tier two looks like 23 employees. Yes. Tier two, sorry, I might have said tier three back since tier two is 23 employees, and then tier three would be the remainder of those. So
Thank you.
Yep.
So then my other side of that question is, so I know that for ASRS, the calculation of what the payout is, what the liability is going to end up being, is based on years in service, age, and a multiplier. Is PSPRS calculated the same way?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, Vice Chair Carr, yes. It's a slightly different calculation. The benefits are a little bit different, but the it's basically the same type of formula based upon average wages, depending on what tier you're in, obviously, but average wages, length of service that you have, and then a multiplier. So, yes, the calculation is roughly the same.
Okay, so when we're saying that this is our liability that we're assuming and we're trying to get 100%, what age service years, what assumption are we making there? That everybody's got 30 years in and they're getting the max?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Carr, it's based upon the actuaries, and they're looking at our specific employee base because each of our plans are unique and distinct, by that I mean Town of Marana's PD, their calculation, their employee base is a little bit different than ours because of the makeup of their staff, their police force. So our, they are making certain assumptions that apply uniformly throughout the entire public safety space. But then applying those uniform assumptions distinctly to looking at our demographics and our employee base and applying them distinctly to our employees and our police force so that we get our own distinct calculation.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Proceed, I guess.
So any additional questions on PSPRS or?
I don't think so. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, Melissa, will you read the next item, please? Need to do an approval of that, then,
Mr. Chair. If you were comfortable with a motion, then that would be appreciated. And if you want to see additional changes, we can bring it back to the next meeting. That is up to you. That's your you and the commission's purview.
Do we have a motion to approve the changes to the PSPS policies?
I would move to approve.
We have a second.
Second.
Okay. We had a motion to approve from Vice Commissioner Carr, seconded by Commissioner Garland. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. Now we can go to item four.
Agenda item number four, the review, discussion, and possible action on proposed draft financial and budgetary policies.
So, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, this is obviously a carryover, trying to incorporate some of the comments and feedback that was that I received at the last BFC meeting. Those changes are included in a high level in your agenda packet, the report, the executive summary, policy 1-1, annual budget process. We removed the program level language, so kind of a minor adjustment there. Policy 1-3, fiscal monitoring and reporting. 2.0, we changed presented to distributed. That was not requested, but it was just something, kind of a little thing that I caught. We're not really doing presentations on the CIP. We're really distributing the quarterly report to our council. So just wanted to clarify that. Policy 1-5, capital expenditures and improvements. I added a minor assets definition. I know that was an issue of concern at the last meeting. That actually, we used to have a minor assets definition in prior iterations of the policy, removed it because I didn't really feel like it it was appropriate to be in the capital expenditures, so it really kind of got dropped and lost in the shuffle, but brought that back, but then also added a minor assets policy under 10.0. Now, you know, I don't know if this is, again, because they're not capital assets per se, I don't know if this is really the right spot for that. I mean, we could look at dropping that. That'll be up to, I'm open to suggestion there, dropping that down into internal controls. I think that was another option that was mentioned at the last meeting, but included in capital asset, capital expenditures and improvements for now. And then the PSPRS pension funding policy really aligned the language to the, you know, to the draft that was just voted for, you know, to have hopefully have council approve it at a future meeting. So just, you know, bringing alignment to that policy and reflecting those changes. Policy 1.1-9, the debt policy 2.0. I know, Chair, you had a concern about the 3x excise tax coverage, whether that was a little too liberal or whatnot. So I'm recommending changing that from 3 to 5. I recommended, I think it was last year, a couple of years ago, I recommended 3 because that was consistent with the revenue coverage on our utility for their issuance of debt. But if we changed it to 5, I think that still gives us capacity to accomplish what we need to accomplish with a potential debt issuance in the future, whenever that may be. And yet it also brings it to a little bit more of a conservative, it makes it a harder bar to reach, a harder threshold to achieve in terms of the revenue coverage. So a little bit more conservative policy there with that update. Again, open to feedback on that. And then policy 1-10, fund balance, remove bed tax, again, kind of a minor issue, but it's kind of a cleanup under in the table under the general fund. And with that, open to any additional feedback, questions, comments, concerns with the draft policy before you this evening. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Any questions or comments on the policies? I have a couple. The debt. Maybe I confused on what I was kind of heading for. I guess what I was looking for is that what, you know, how much debt service do you think you're able to handle from a compared to your pledged revenue that would be reasonable and not become too much of a burden, because those revenues are obviously used for other things as well. Now, moving it up to 5x, I took it based on the CAFR, you have $4.3 million in debt service. Well, if you took that times 5, that's like over $21 million. Now, would you want to have a $21 million debt service paid out of the in total? That to me seems like it represents about 40-some% of your pledged revenue based on what was in the CAFR, but that would seem to me to be a bit high. So I guess what I was getting at is, what do you feel is a good percentage of debt service compared to your pledge, because your pledged revenue is used for so many other things as well. So that's what I'm getting at. So I would prefer 3. I would think 3 would be better than 5, because, you know, you're keeping your debt service around, I forget the percentage, maybe 10-14% of your pledged revenue, just so that at some point you're probably going to have to decide, do we need to have another revenue source for debt if we, you know, keep going to issue a lot of debt. So I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a misunderstanding here with the way that the policy is structured. So, moving it from 3 to 5 it would require you to have, it actually reduces the capacity, your debt issuance capacity moving forward, because. Because, and I'll read it here, the town shall only issue additional non-enterprise fund debt should its excise taxes equal or exceed 5x the annual debt service requirement. So as you, it kind of has that inverse effect. We'll utilize, round numbers. Say your debt service that you're proposing or total debt service is $1 million. Well, you would need to have $5 million of, instead of $3 million, you have to have $5 million of excise tax revenues to issue $1 million of debt versus $3 million. Does that make sense, Mr. Chair?
Okay.
So yeah, it actually does constrain your debt issuance. But again, it allows a little bit of flexibility for future issuances moving forward, but it does provide a constraining impact to that.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I understood that and be on the same page there. In your fund balance policy, you still show committed fund balance to be, if it's anything over 30%, it goes to finance capital. And in here, the current policy you have also going to PSPRS. Do you want to keep that in there or take that out since we have it kind of covered in another policy? Do you want to add something else to that instead?
Mr. Chair, I'm comfortable with the way the policy currently reads. I think those are if we were over 30%, that's where I'd be comfortable with those excess funds going. I would not want to drop, because I think because the policies get reviewed every year. But I think in the future, I want to continue to play this out. I know we just went through the discussion, and I'm comfortable with where we're at, where we landed. What was proposed, certainly, but I want to kind of see where PSPRS goes in the future, and if we need to continue to address it, or if we can address it with additional contributions, then I think we need to take a look at that. And then capital, obviously, needs to be addressed, and those needs need to be addressed moving forward. So I would not recommend dropping PSPRS. Because I think that could continue to be an issue moving forward, but hopefully not.
Okay, that's fine. Do you need a motion from us to approve the policies as well? Or
yes, if you would, if you're comfortable. And we want to allow time for Commissioner Garland, because I think she wants to chime in as well.
Joyce, did you have questions?
I did, thank you,
okay.
Mr. Chair. Mr. Gephardt, I think with Chair Mason, I'm concerned about the debt ratio. When you put it in the words of numbers, so, $1 million of debt to $5 million, that still seems like you are utilizing a lot more of the excise tax than maybe the city can do. I mean, that will take away from other services. So I know you're comfortable with it, but I just think that's something you may want to look at for next year. And particularly as we start looking at the five-year forecast, because of if you don't go out for bonds, then you are going to have some other issues in the future with your capital. Just something to keep in mind. But I also wanted to thank everyone for allowing us to have input on these policies. I think they're very important to the town. And I think we've made some good recommendations and changes. So thank you.
I guess, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, just as a clarification, so do you have a recommendation as to what that coverage ratio ought to look like, or a general comment, concern that we need to continue to look at it moving forward and maybe address it next year, just for clarification?
I don't have a particular recommendation. I do think, along with Chair Mason, that the town may need to consider other revenue sources, because debt will start eating away, and particularly if you're also putting 80, more money on PSPRS. So now you're taking those dollars and you're putting them on other liabilities and not necessarily for other services within the community.
Got it. Thank you.
Just another comment on that. It also is that, you're funding your capital, your 5% that you contribute. So there's a lot of other things that you have requirements for. So you know, just to have something that starts giving you a red light blinking when you start to issue debt, that is, do we need to continue pay as we go, or do we need to, you know, to look at another source? That's both of our concerns in that area.
Yeah, and I'll just say, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, I share those concerns, and we will. We've got plans in the works to address some of these issues from a revenue standpoint as well, to try to alleviate and minimize the use of debt moving forward. So I am in agreement, but there's, and I can't share what those are right now, but just understand that those concerns have been heard.
Okay. Do I have a motion to approve?
I move to approve.
Second?
Second.
All right. We have a motion to approve from Vice Chair Carr, seconded by Commissioner Garland. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Approved unanimously. Melissa, could you go to item number 5, please?
Agenda item number 5, presentation and possible discussion regarding the town's 5-year financial forecast through fiscal year 2028-2029. Okay,
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, let's see if we can pull up our presentation for you this evening. Bear with us for a second. Okay, so a couple things before we really kind of dig into the 5-year forecast. So this is something that's in policy, that town staff presents a 5-year forecast. This is something that we're presenting earlier than we have in prior years. We felt like really this ought to be a precursor of leading into the budget discussions, not something that kind of falls on the tail end of those budget discussions. So, and additionally to that, I just wanted to make clear that that what you have before you in the 5-year forecast, especially as it relates to next fiscal year, does not necessarily or will not perfectly align to the budget that is presented for the town manager's recommended budget when that gets distributed. This is a forecast versus the budget includes some items being that we're a town, a municipal organization. The budget will include some items like contingencies and things like that that may not necessarily be included in the forecast, but allow for some flexibility in the budget itself. So, with that said, I'll just kind of dive right in. This overview should not be a surprise here. This is kind of something that we present every single year. We don't present all of the funds in the 5-year forecast, just our selected funds here, the general fund, the highway fund, the capital fund, and the community center fund. And, of course, it's a snapshot, so it's based upon currently known information, as current as we have it. And it serves as a planning document for future budgets, and then the forecast is updated annually, and you see our sources there, the same sources that other local governments in Arizona utilize for a forecast of this type. This year, again, this is kind of a unique 5-year forecast in that we've got two scenarios that are presented. One includes a debt issuance and one does not. And the reason why we are including that is because if you look at the one that doesn't have a debt issuance included in it, you see that there's some negative numbers in the capital fund that are displayed. So we wanted to show that. That does not mean that the debt will be issued, that we're planning, or that it's a proposed debt issuance. Shows that we've got a gap there that we're going to have to address in some form or fashion. Now, you know, that can be addressed in different ways. Debt issuance may be one. Grants can be utilized for some of the capital projects because because capital is really the driving force as to why we're showing the negative numbers in the capital fund. Or we can look at additional revenue sources. So those additional revenue sources are not included in the 5-year forecast because we're still evaluating that, and they would need to go through a proposal process and review, and ultimately town council approval. We're just high level here. State shared two bullet points there at the end. State shared revenues, they're really the big ones that are driving the forecast. State shared revenues decline over the next 2 years, causing a total general fund revenue decline over those years. And that's problematic just simply from the standpoint that if our total revenues in the general fund are declining over the next 2 years, which they will be, and our expenditures are increasing, then obviously we are starting to close the gap between operating revenues and operating expenditures. Now, the 5-year forecast, I just need to be clear here, the 5-year forecast is structurally balanced from an operational standpoint. We are still good in terms of operating revenues exceeding or meeting our operating expenditures. However, that gap is declining over the next couple years. Actually, in the next 3 years, you kind of see that decline, that gap narrow a little bit. What impact that has is because that excess is utilized to fund capital, then we obviously have less resources available to fund capital, not only in those next few years, but also in future years beyond that. And then street maintenance and road capital project increases, just needed to highlight that. Just from the standpoint that that is really, we've done as much deferring or putting into kind of a contingent schedule our CIP projects as we can to try to address some of the capital issues and needs. But with that said, the street maintenance and road increases that we're seeing, that is, we cannot defer or delay those. That's not recommended because then that has future impacts financially that are not palatable. So, probably some political consequences there as well. So that's not really, we want to deal with our street maintenance and road capital projects, but we're seeing some significant increases on that front. Our pavement preservation, as an example, and we'll get into it again as I kind of roll through the slides, has increased about 50%. So it's going from roughly about $2 million per year to about $3 million or more per year, and that's having a significant impact in the 5-year forecast. So those are kind of the primary big level drivers that are impacting the town in the forecast. And then I'll say in your packet this evening, again, kind of a change. We're always trying to present information a little bit more cleanly and clearly. And so there is a summary there that's in your packet that includes the 5-year forecast. It's got the current year forecast where we anticipate that we're going to end this fiscal year, and then the 5-year forecast starting next year, rolling through 2028-29. So you can kind of hopefully, now I know, realize it's a lot of numbers, a lot of columns, and a lot of rows, but we tried to really simplify that from a really top level viewpoint, so you can kind of get that big picture and kind of see the impacts in both scenarios that are presented this evening. General fund sources assumptions, we are not assuming any major economic downturns in the forecast. I think there is going to be some slowing in the state, not any sort of deep recession or certainly not a depression. That none of that is assumed. Now, there are some challenges with the state budget situation. I've read that they are, forecasting. Their forecast is a $1 billion deficit for the state. That's one forecast. Another forecast I saw is 1.7. Whether that has an impact to the towns moving forward, that remains to be seen. But we're not anticipating or including that in our forecast at this time. Continued growth of 2 to 5% in most local sales tax categories. So I want to be clear here. When we look at the total general fund decline over the next several years in total revenues, it's not a local sales tax issue that we're looking at. We are still anticipating local sales tax growth. We've seen that growth. There is going to be inflation, and I think they're not really in. Now we're seeing some slowing, and that is included in the forecast. But we're not in, dialing those the local sales tax down to zero or even negative growth. That is not anticipated in the 5-year forecast. New tax categories are included, and what I mean by that is there are certain tax categories that City of Tucson has, Town of Marana has, Town of Sahuarita has, that Town of Oral Valley doesn't have. And these are some of the things that we need to look at moving forward to address some of these challenges, and we will be looking at those. And again, there's going to be a process for that, but right now there's no assumptions for additional revenue categories in the forecast. Construction sales tax reflects relatively stable activity in the near term, slight declines. Construction sales tax is difficult to forecast because it is fairly volatile. Because it is so volatile, we try to be very conservative with that. So we do have a very conservative construction sales tax forecast included. We're hoping that, and we're outperforming construction sales tax year to date. This year, we're hoping that that will continue into future years. But we just want to be very cautious there. You see our single family residential permits, you see some increases over the next several years, over what's, forecasted this year, but over what was budgeted this year, certainly, you see some increases in 26 and 27. We are very close to being built out. So these are not, eye-popping numbers by any stretch, but these are just some of the assumptions, and this is based off the most current information we have from our Planning and Economic Development Department. And then state shared revenues, I already kind of hit on that, but the issue here, again, is not the state shared revenues we get from a sales tax standpoint. What we're really seeing, or what is being forecast, and this is coming directly from the League of Cities and Towns, they provide the forecast to the various cities and towns throughout the state, is that the impact of that income tax rate reduction, Governor Ducey's last actions was to implement a 2.5% flat tax townwide and for income tax, and that's that is having a limiting impact on state income tax collections and being forecast moving forward. And then as that has a limiting impact on how much the state collects, obviously those distributions that the state distributes to cities and towns becomes less. So we're being impacted by that. That is not an issue that is limited to the town of Oro Valley. City of Tucson is having the same issue. Town of Marana is having the same issue. All of the states and cities, or the cities and towns throughout the state are encountering this issue, and with the numbers that we get keep getting lower and lower. So they are continuing to kind of ratchet that down and the impact of that action and how it hits us. So general fund sources forecast here. And I'm not going to go through all the numbers again. I think hopefully some of these comments that I've already made kind of illustrate the point. But I really want to focus on the total sources there. And you see the fiscal, what we did here, again, this is a little bit different than prior years. We actually included a couple years of actuals, but we could only fit one in terms of, otherwise it just becomes too much. But we included fiscal 23 as an actual, kind of as a reference point for yourself, for the community, for town council, certainly when this gets presented. About $57.6 million in total revenues for the general fund in fiscal year 23. Those are actual revenues there. And you see the forecast through this fiscal year, about $58.8 million. And then you see next year 57.2, and that's really what the, you know, what the issue that we're dealing with there. And again, if you look through all of those categories, it's really driven by state shared revenues. That is the, that's the source that declines, that's impacting that decrease. 57.5, it increases a little bit in fiscal 26, 58.8, almost 58.8 in fiscal 27. And if you look at that and compare that to what our forecast is this year, we still haven't even achieved break even. We haven't achieved that same 58.8. It's close, but haven't really even hit that same amount that we're forecasting for fiscal 24. So, so again, that's where I'm saying it's going to be about 3 or 4 years before we even start to see any sort of revenue growth, total revenue growth in the general fund. Fiscal 28, fiscal 29, certainly those are out years. A little bit more difficult to forecast, but that's where we really kind of start to pull out and actually exceed what our current year estimate is for forecasted general fund revenues. So here's a little chart here that again kind of hopefully illustrates, provides more of a historical perspective of what our revenue growth is and sources of income throughout the last several years, and then compares that to the forecast moving forward. So just, you know, more illustrative, not just looking at the numbers, but kind of a visual there to help help you understand. Breaks it out by category pretty nicely. You can see local sales tax again. Not really any sort of declines there. Moderate, very minimal growth, I should say. Temperate, conservative growth there. State share revenues, you see that decline. And then it kind of starts to pull out of that where we start to recover in those out years. Licenses and permits, charges for service, other revenues. Those are really pretty minimal in terms of the overall scope of things. Looking at the uses on the general fund, employee pay adjustments and police step increases, we included those in all years of the forecast. We included very modest capacity for new FTEs. I want to address that. So in past years in the forecast, we included anywhere from 3 to 4 new employees in the town. We've dialed that back in the forecast because of the challenges in capacity. So next fiscal year, we actually have not included any. So our total FTE count is the same. What we're proposing for next fiscal year is absolutely the same as what we are, what we have on board this current fiscal year. The year after that, one. The year after that, one. And then two, two, two. So that's what our plan is. Again, really trying to, we don't anticipate that there's going to be any significant needs. We did, as going through the budget process, we did look at the request for new personnel. We didn't see any significant fires that were that needed to be addressed, that we needed to put out, where we were having challenges with service levels. So so we're comfortable with that. Continued capacity for employee-related personnel costs, you know, again, need to budget for health insurance increases and the like. Continuing elevated PSPRS payments, we kind of dealt with that earlier this evening, and we'll kind of see how that plays out. O&M assumes current service levels, but what we did with this forecast is we actually increased our O&M pretty significantly in terms of the percentage increase over what we've utilized in past forecasts. Because what we're seeing is higher inflation and the impact that that's having on town on the town budget on the O&M side. So we are taking more of a pessimistic view that inflation is going to get under control anytime soon. We're starting, you know, and I think if you read the articles out there, and they're not hard to find, you know, the Fed and whatever, they're starting to say maybe we haven't done enough and maybe we need to increase rates even more. So that's starting, and that was not even a conversation about 3 to 4 months ago, but now it's a conversation because inflation numbers continue to run a little bit higher and hotter than what they hope. So we're, you know, and we did take more of a historical view on this, even looking back, a number of years, I think we went back 4 or 5 years, looked at that O&M growth over that span of time. We're like, yeah, we're a little bit too conservative. We need to be a little more aggressive here because we think that that's going to end up being reality. So, unfortunately. And then transfers for CIP projects. Again, no change there really from what our policy is. But what you'll see there, it says plus all fund balances over 30% reserve, excluding contingency. What you'll see in the forecast, and I think it's in the next slide, we're actually a little bit higher than 30%, and that's purposeful. The reason why is because if town council, for whatever reason, there's a need to dip into contingency, we didn't want that contingency reallocation to dip us below that 30% threshold. So there's a little bit of cushion there where we're a little bit above 30% in the forecast, just in case. Now, hopefully that's not the case, but we wanted to account for that, not have a potential contingency reallocation be the reason why we dip below 30%. Now, we'll see when this kind of plays out in reality how that works, but that's what the forecast shows right now. Okay, so here's the uses forecast, and again, you can kind of see the reserve as a percentage of expenditures. We're basically following what the policy says, but what you see here is those transfers out. We've got some heavy years. We had a heavy year in fiscal year 23, almost $16 million transfers out. A heavy year this current year. We've got a lot of capital projects on the books, and a heavy year that's forecast for next year because we've got some significant excess reserves over that 30% threshold in the general fund. But moving forward, once those transfers are made, 26, 27, 28 and 29, you see those transfers out really dialing and ratcheting back because there's just not the capacity there to keep that level of spending on the capital side moving forward. So general fund is healthy. Again, operate structurally balanced, operating revenues exceeding operating expenditures. So that's the general fund in a nutshell. Here's another chart for the general fund, just kind of, again, illustrating that green line is our revenue line. And those, I need to be clear here, that green line is operating revenues specifically. So we account for both operating and non-operating, ongoing or recurring revenues versus revenues that are more lend themselves more toward a one-time use that are not recurring. So those are what that green line really displays is the recurring revenues, and then that is juxtaposed to the bars there, which show the personnel, O&L, everything, all of our uses there, capital outlay and transfers out. And you can kind of see again those transfers out. That was a larger percentage there in 23, 24, 25, really dialing that back, 26 moving forward. Again, just another chart here that shows that that we're above our reserve, 30% reserve in the general fund, showing all the sources and uses, just kind of a really high-level view of that and what that looks like in the forecast. Highway fund, again, this is the challenging fund that's really really driving the results of the forecast, I'll say, more than anything else. What we're assuming is really moderate growth, 3.4 to 3.6% in highway user gas tax revenues, and that's provided to us from the Arizona Department of Transportation. There's not significant revenues in this fund. Other types of significant revenues, it really is strongly driven in terms of, from a revenue standpoint, proportionally, highway gas tax is the primary revenue source there. And then transfers in. Now, again, we've got some capital, road capital projects that are in the forecast that need to be dealt with over the next 5 years, and that's where the combination of those road overlay projects, some bridge repair and maintenance projects, and then our ongoing pavement preservation, the skyrocketing that we've seen on pavement preservation, that is causing some pinch points in the five-year forecast for the HERF, which then means there's not enough HERF revenue to address those, so we have to transfer money in to be able to keep that fund sustained and healthy financially. Here's the forecast for the sources. Again, state share of revenue is the lion's share of it, and then you see those transfers in. We've got anywhere from 4 to 5 million from fiscal 25 to fiscal 27, or actually fiscal 28, and then two million in fiscal 29. Fiscal 29, we don't have as much in terms of other types of capital projects, road projects, additional road projects that overlays and things like that that are needed that are forecast in the 10-year CIP. So not as much needed to transfer in there, but also there's not as much to transfer in there as well. And then the uses assumptions, personnel and O&M, really following the same assumptions that we utilize in the general fund. Pavement preservation, again, 3.2 to 3.6. It was just a couple years ago we were at 2 million or less. So really seeing significant growth there. We're hoping that that growth moderates. We don't anticipate that it's going to go up another 50%, but this is where we're at. We don't anticipate that it's actually going to decline. So this is the new normal, what we anticipate to be the new normal moving forward. And I believe we include about 3% increases over the forecast term from that $3.2 million level. Capital outlay, again, just following our CIP schedule on that for the road projects. Here's the uses, kind of in the table type of format, all the numbers. Personnel, pretty consistent, a little bit of growth there, but the issue here you see is on the capital side. Fiscal 24, about 4.2 million. Next year, fiscal 25, going up to about 5.5, then increasing to about 6.3, and then 7.2 and 7.2, and those are the years that are causing some challenges for us in the forecast. Overall, still maintain positive balances in the ending fund balance, but only because of the transfers in that's really augmenting this fund and assisting the fund with dealing with these major capital road needs. Here's the chart, again, high level for the capital fund, sources, uses, ending fund balance, and pretty balanced, but only because of the transfers. Here's another chart for the highway fund. Again, you can kind of see consistent but very modest growth in the revenues. So we're not seeing significant gas tax revenue increases, but very consistent but modest growth. And then the capital, you just see that yellow bar, that yellow part of the bar chart. You just see it kind of ramp up over the next several years until fiscal 29. Capital fund sources assumptions. So moving on to the capital fund here, it's supported by general fund transfers. That's its primary source. So as the general fund as we're seeing our surplus of ongoing revenues, over ongoing expenditures, as we're seeing that surplus decline, we have less that we can transfer in for capital needs and purposes. And so that's what that's really what you're seeing on the capital fund. This capital fund also, just by way, it's getting its, the lion's share of its source from the general fund via transfer, but then it's also transferring, so it's leaking out on the backside to augment the highway fund. So that's what you're seeing on the use side. Non-enterprise fund vehicle reserves charged to the general fund based on replacement costs. So that's a big part of the capital fund is just our vehicle reserves, and you can kind of see the assumption that we have there. And then transfers annually from the general fund, again, just really following policy there. Here's the capital fund source forecast. Again, that the sources, you see this actually does have the assumption that there is a debt issuance, the bond proceeds there in fiscal 26-27, and that's really the one thing that keeps this fund balanced and somewhat healthy, although you'll see in fiscal 29 that ending fund balance is really meager. So without that $11 million issuance there, this fund does turn negative to the tune of about $8.5 million over the five-year term. Capital outlay reflects the 10-year CIP. We have done a lot of maneuvering, I'll say, with the 10-year CIP. We placed a lot of projects that have been in the CIP in prior years. We've kind of placed them off to the side. We're going to be looking for, again, additional alternative sources to fund some of those, grant funding, probably might be looking at some revenue enhancements and things like that, even in the general fund, to try to deal with that. But in the meantime, we don't have those really dialed in or assumed in the forecast. New vehicle purchases, in addition to replacements, assumed at one patrol vehicle and two other vehicles annually. So as I talked about personnel, the 1-1-2-2-2 scenario in the forecast, the one and the one in the first couple years would probably be police. And if you add another police officer to the force, you have to equip them with a vehicle. And so that's what our assumption is there. 10% inflation for vehicle replacements. I think I may have already mentioned that. And then transfers to the highway fund. Again, I think I dealt with that. Here's the uses for the capital fund. Again, I think you look at the ending fund balances that are proposed. Pretty healthy early on. Fiscal 25, we still have almost $11 million in the fund. Drops down to 6.7, goes up to 11 in fiscal 27. But if you'll recall, the reason why it's going back up really is because that's when that debt issuance hits on the source side. So without that debt issuance, you're really about even in fiscal year 27, and then dropping negative in 28 and 29. Even with that $11 million issuance, you're in fiscal 29, you're a little over $100,000. So again, very, very meager there. And if you look at the capital outlay, fiscal 26, about $2.7 million, 3.2, 4.2, and 3.3. Those are pretty meager capital years for us, especially juxtaposed to what we've encountered recently or what we're proposing for next year. So yes, this is going to be a challenging fund for us, but it's not really this fund per se. It's really the highway fund that's causing the challenge because of those road projects. Transfers out there again, the green, so you can kind of see what's forecasted, and then the all other CIP, and then our vehicle equipment replacement. You can kind of see that that's actually pretty consistent, goes up from 1.8 to 2.3. It's all the other CIP projects. There's just not a lot of cushion there. That's, when you're talking about 2 million or 1 million or 1.2, that is not, for a town of our size, and that is not a lot. So that's a concern. And that's something that that we'll need to hopefully address moving forward. Here again, the overall chart here showing sources, uses, and fund balance, and then community center fund. Community center fund actually is it looks solid. We're utilizing the same growth factors for local sales tax as the general fund for the relevant categories that are included there. Conservative 1% growth for parks and recreation, golf rounds, 1%, flat to 1% increase. So again, very, very conservative, modest growth, HOA contributions, and after fiscal 25, not assuming any sort of re-ups of those contracts or additional funding from HOAs. And this fund it does stay balanced over the five-year term. There is some fluctuation in ending fund balance, which we'll see in the next slide, I believe. But here again, revenue sources, $10.5 million, $10.6 million, $10.8 million, 11.1. So very, very modest growth, stable is what we're anticipating here. You see the taxes, again, modest growth there, but ending up at about $4.46 million in fiscal 29. So we anticipate that that's going to continue to grow over the term. On the uses assumption side, again, a lot of the same assumptions as the general fund. The contracted expenditures include the Push 9 whole course, which, of course, council decided to keep that course as a golf course moving forward. So we have included that. Capital outlay reflects our 10-year tentative CIP schedule. Again, that's that'll be dependent upon when we go through the budget process this year, in the next month or two, and what input we receive from council. $200,000 annually for the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve maintenance, $150,000 annually for the building improvement and minor assets, and then debt service transfers for parks and rec bonds and the energy efficiency bonds. Here's the uses side of the community center fund. Things I'll point out here, again, just really looking high level, looking at ending fund balances. This fund does stay without any sort of augmentation. It does stay financially healthy. We do kind of dip down due to capital, projected capital needs. We do kind of dip down into fiscal 27, $340,000. That's kind of the low point. And then pulling back out fiscal 29, we're back up to $1.9 million, and we'll see what that looks like. Again, that's 5 years out in the future, but very little capital needs are our program for that year, and so we would see a significant increase and bump in our fund balance as a result. Kind of top-down, the Community Center Fund chart here of the sources, uses, and the projected fund balances, all positive. No augmentation necessary there. So assuming good things for Community Center Fund, which we, quite frankly, we need due to the highway fund. So hopefully good news there. And this is a nice little chart that our senior budget analyst put together for us, really showing, again, kind of that historical perspective of the Community Center Fund and showing, again, the forecast out for the next five-year period. The revenues, we've seen good, strong revenue growth. We don't anticipate that we're going to kind of see the bump we saw from fiscal 21 to 22, really more consistent revenue growth moving forward, able to meet the needs of the fund, all the transfers, the O&M, structurally balanced, so a good picture here moving forward. And then I wanted to show this chart here because this is our non-enterprise debt service due by year. This includes principal and interest. So this is looking at our debt service schedule and what our requirements are for payment moving forward. This just shows what has been currently issued. The two most recent issuances, the Parks and Rec, the $25 million Parks and Rec bond issuance is included here. The PSPRS pension obligation bond is included in this. You see that fiscal 27 is where we start to see decline, and then fiscal 28, we start to see some of those debt issuances roll off. The large decline is fiscal 2039, 2040. I probably won't be here, but that's when the pension obligation bonds are paid off. And then fiscal 2040 to 42 is the just the remainder of the $25 million Parks and Rec bonds. So there is, I guess the story here is why I wanted to present this is there is some capacity in terms of debt issuance that over the next 2 or 3 years, we do have some issuances that will roll off that could create some capacity if we needed to issue debt that we wouldn't still significantly exceed that $4 million annual payment that we're currently making from the town as a whole. With that, I know that's a lot of information, but I'd be more than happy to address any questions that you have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you,
Thank you. Any questions?
I have quite a few. So I'll start with the charge for service. So I know you said every year you have built in an increase for personnel costs. Obviously, to provide those services every year, that means that cost is increasing. So did you build in, like, for instance, if you charge $100 now for this, in 5 years, is it still $100? Or did you put annual increases into the charges for service?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Carr, where there is a direct link between charges for services that the town collects, which is a revenue, then there's a personnel on the expenditure side of the equation, there's an offset, an expenditure that's directly associated with that. We did include increases to account for that. And where you primarily see that is in the Parks and Rec, on the Parks and Rec side. Whether it's the Aquatic Center or especially Community Center Fund, the town operating revenues and the town operating expenditures. When we see that the camps are well attended, that brings in additional revenue, but then it costs staff time to staff those camps and activities. And so there is an impact there, and we see that we're seeing that this current fiscal year, and that is included in the forecast certainly.
And then I know you said for the FTEs that you are only adding one and then one. I'm sitting here looking at my Ore Valley Path Forward shirt, and so I know that when we had that conversation, we had discussed that you may need to hire folks for that project. Is that included in this?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Carr, we don't have any. If we were going to hire, it would probably be contract staff. We would not hire full and again, it's not my decision, but in the forecast, we don't have any permanent full-time equivalents that are proposed specifically for the general plan amendment project. That is a temporary. I mean, we're 2 or 3 years out, but it's a temporary type issue, which tends to lend itself towards more temporary type staff and work. I think what our plan is at this point is to try to make do with what we got. And if we need to adjust workloads and schedules and reallocate and do some things and flex, then we will do that. But I need to be clear, we're not planning any sort of significant personnel reductions at this point. We're not planning on holding vacancies or anything like that. But at this point, we do want to be very, very cautious moving forward that we're not biting off more than we can chew on ongoing expenditures that have a burden on the town and hamper our ability to deal with some of the capital needs that we need to address.
So my next question is on capital somewhat. So I know you said that your projections don't include the new police station, but obviously that was in your 10-year, so there's a significant cost for that. I don't know if it's 20, 50. I know you guys haven't decided exactly what you're building or costs, but I mean, is that something we're considering already? Because again, that's going to be a significant outlay for the
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Carr, it's a good question. So we kind of have a placeholder in the 10-year CIP. We need to more direction from council on that issue specifically. Are we going to build ground up? Are we going to look at a current facility and just remodel it? Are we going to remodel our existing facility? So there are different options that we need to take a look at. We haven't received that direction at this point. I know we are looking at potentially additional revenue sources. Again, that would be probably factor into that equation, but I think it's preliminary for us to include any of that at this point because once we kind of settle, I think on a general vision as to what this thing looks like moving forward and can kind of wrap our arms around potential costs, then that's where we would need to have a conversation about, okay, how are we going to fund this? Is this bond issuance? Is this additional taxes? What does that look like? So yes, that's not included in the forecast, and I think any of that discussion is just really too preliminary at this point for us.
And then my next one is on the vehicles. I know you said you are forecasting basically a replacement of three a year, two part. So how many vehicles, like, do we have 30 vehicles, and so three is 10% a year? And then the second part is, how long do we normally keep a vehicle before replacing? After 5 years, after seven, and I'm sure that depends on what type of vehicle, I'm sure.
Yeah.
These people put more miles than these folks, so.
Right, yeah. Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, the vehicle discussion is something that we're going to continue to have discussion about moving forward, because it's a big issue for us. We do have a large, pretty large fleet that the town maintains. We also have this vehicle replacement program or vehicle reserve program that we place money aside to be able to address our vehicle needs on an ongoing basis. And I think the challenge that we're seeing is that I'll address this side first. I don't want to lose, and don't let me lose sight of your first question as to what percentage. We have a pretty significant fleet. We have a vehicle reserve program that has functioned well for the town historically. What we're seeing is that the cost of vehicles has increased pretty significantly, especially on the police side. There's a lot of outfitting that goes into those vehicles and new technology and things that is driving those costs up. But even staff vehicles, we're seeing increases there, pretty significant inflation. And our vehicle reserve program is starting to feel a little bit challenged, whether it's even enough. As it relates to the new vehicles or new personnel, we're not really concerned about that from a reserve status, because those new vehicles are considered new. They're not included in the reserve. But we do have a replacement schedule. It is, you know, and I couldn't tell you because it's not mine. We have a fleet manager that manages that for us. But it's a good question. But it is based upon utilization, repair history, mileage driven, hours driven. There's a number of different metrics, several different metrics that they monitor our vehicles and determine when the appropriate time for replacement is. With that said, again, this is something that we're going to look at moving forward, because I think there's some different options for us that we might investigate in terms of maybe looking at more of a, you know, I don't want to get into those options at this point. I don't know, but there are some options that we may investigate that might be a little more financially efficient for us. And certainly with the inflation that we're seeing on that side, anything that we can do to kind of moderate that and deal with that situation, from a fiscal or not just a fiscal standpoint, but just in terms of an efficiency standpoint as well, we need to take a look at that. So I don't want to propose tell you what those options are, but we've got some things in our hip pocket that we're going to take a look at and we'll probably be bringing forward in the future on that side. In terms of what percentage, what was your first question? The percentage of vehicles that are in the forecast versus our total fleet. Unfortunately, I don't have that number, but it's something I could certainly dig up for you. Again, working with our fleet department, they have all that information, and we could follow up on that with you.
Okay. Yeah, it just seemed really low, because I'm assuming, yes, you probably potentially have 100 or more vehicles, so three a year. Are we assuming that vehicles last 20 years? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just doing the math, three doesn't seem like it's going to be enough to replace things as often as they need to.
Yeah,
so that
was Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, I just want to clarify, those two or three vehicles, those would be new vehicles for new staff. They would not be the, you know, kind of that reserve. That is an ongoing program that is much more robust.
Noted. Thank you.
Yep.
And then my final one, so for the community fund, I know we had said that you guys were starting to work on the elevator this year. Is that going to be completed this year and funded out this year, or is that getting pushed to next year as well?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Carr, there's some significant, I don't know if Town Manager Wilkins wants to jump in on this one. There's some significant issues with the elevator project. It's one of those things where the deeper you dig, the uglier it gets, unfortunately. So we're seeing some potential cost overruns where, and then we anticipate that that's going to come back before council very quickly in short order once we kind of wrap our arms around what that looks like. But we're staff is definitely working on it. So I do anticipate that that will likely carry over into next year, but I don't know that definitively. There's the possibility.
Just one question concerning the fleet. You do all your own maintenance, or do you contract it out?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, we do our own. We have our own fleet maintenance department. Yeah, so we handle that internally.
Joyce, did you have questions?
Oh, of course I do. So thank you for the opportunity to ask the questions. And I'd like to say congratulations on only having a 2% health insurance increase. Since insurance all around is going up way higher than 2%. So where in the general fund in the forecast do you have budgeted for debt service? Or is it, do you have that in a separate fund?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, it is in its own separate fund. We have a debt service fund that
trying to tie out the transfers out to figure out exactly how that was going. So the debt service then on the transfer, it's included in the transfers out in the general fund. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, okay. Commissioner Garland, that's correct. Yes.
All right. So that's why you end up with some capacity there. So I really like the summaries that you have with the proposed debt and without the proposed debt. I think it's a little concerning looking at the capital fund with the negative numbers if you do not go out for bonds. Just something to think about in your illustration. The money has to come from somewhere, so that fund won't necessarily be in a negative. You'll have to transfer dollars in probably from the general fund or the HERF fund. And I think it's a better presentation to show the necessity of covering that deficit and then the impact it has on the other two funds.
Okay.
Because you may not make your reserves in the general fund.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's a good point. I mean, we did include the debt service, I'm sure you caught it, but we did include the debt service in the capital fund, which is not necessarily consistent with how we treat the other debt service. So, yes.
We can make that
adjustment, but yes.
That debt service then would be paid by the general fund?
Yes.
So your transfers from the general fund would be going up? Well, it wouldn't, because you've already included that in your transfers to the capital fund.
Yeah, I think Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, I think you end up at the same point, irrespective, because the primary funding mechanism, whether you pay for it or show it coming out of the general fund as a transfer to the debt service fund, or it's being paid out of the capital fund, it's overall, in terms of, if you combine those funds overall, you end up at the same point.
Yes, definitely would. However, you won't come up at the same point if you have to transfer money into the capital fund without that getting that bond issuance. Your general fund will definitely start to have a big impact.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, I think the point there is the transfers out in the general fund would increase, showing a lower ending fund balance, but then you wouldn't need as much of a transfer into your capital fund. So I think ultimately it would offset. I'd have to play through that, but I believe it would offset in your general fund. Your transfer out of the general fund, transfer out instead of going to capital fund would go to debt service.
Oh, that was the other thing that I wanted to understand is how do you do the transactions for RTA right now? Is that in a separate fund?
Chair Mason, Commissioner Garland, we do have a separate RTA fund. I'm not sure which transactions you're referring to specifically, but yes, we do have a separate RTA fund.
So if RTA, I know that's going to be coming up for a vote, doesn't pass, will that have an impact on your CIP plan? And then where that is funded?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, yes. There, if RTA is not re-upped, we have a contingency plan to potentially look at an additional half-cent replacement, essentially half-cent sales tax that would be specific to the town. So it would not be a tax increase to our residents because they're already paying it. They're just paying it to RTA. Now it would come to the town. The town would have discretion as to where those funds would be allocated and utilized.
So if that were the case and you were going to, even if RTA gets passed again, you're going to be expanding your roads and making changes. Would what I'm concerned about is you don't have enough in the CIP for preservation, road preservation, unless you think you do.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, the pavement preservation, that's our road preservation, and that's actually included in the highway fund. And again, that's the item that increased 50% and is kind of causing some pinch points for us. So I believe that the forecast actually does adequately address the needs of our pavement preservation in the forecast.
Okay. I think those were my questions. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
On the bond, the $11 million figure you have, is that a pretty exact figure, or is it just a placeholder?
No, Mr. Chair, members of the commission know this, it's just a placeholder. That number is going to flex depending upon future actions of the BFC and town council, especially town council, because again, we've got some revenue enhancement ideas that we will probably be bringing forward that will hopefully minimize that or buffer that a little, minimize it a little bit.
In the capital fund, under your assumptions, you're showing a rate of 3.75 for a 20-year term. That seems a bit low compared to, is that what you're anticipating your bond issues about? Or?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, we're actually, with our AA plus rating, I think that's actually about the right spot. Even with actions that the Fed has taken in this current elevated interest rate environment, I believe we can get 3.75 money.
Okay, very good. In your general fund assumptions, you have 1.3 for Oro Valley Marketplace. Do you have additional revenues anticipated later on in the five-year plan for the development there, or is it not going to be completed by then?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I'm going to defer that question to our deputy finance director or senior budget analyst. I think I know the answer, but I don't want to misstate it. Do either of you have that, Chris or Wendy? I don't think my recollection is that we just dealt with the permitting side of those additional revenues and that we didn't really anticipate or plan in additional ongoing recurring revenues, sales tax, bed tax, things of that nature. But again, I don't want to misspeak on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. We do have the marketplace activity included in the forecast, and the local sales tax impact is in there as well. So those new developments coming online, those have been included in the five-year forecast.
Just as a side question, how how does that compare to the revenue you were getting from Marketplace, say, prior to the pandemic when it was going full blast, I guess?
Chair Mason, I'll be honest, we don't track just the Marketplace activity specifically in any great detail. We look at some of our major taxpayers, but this activity is undoubtedly a good thing for the Marketplace. I know we've seen some closures and some changes in the Marketplace. So this activity is definitely a positive as they continue to recover from the pandemic.
If I remember right, was there some kind of a development agreement back where you were giving money back to? Is there a similar agreement like that with the new development?
Chair Mason, that previous agreement ended, and I don't believe we're legally required to enter those agreements any longer.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I'll just jump in there, Chair Mason. In terms of the sales tax, we have to be very careful as to what we can disclose in terms of even the Marketplace, because there are confidentiality strict confidentiality requirements that the state imposes on us, and we don't want to, we would not want to disclose and place ourselves in jeopardy of disclosing something that would be considered confidential there.
I was just looking at it from a perspective of the overall,
sure,
not individual.
Right. So. Yeah, but I mean, there, when you have certain anchors and whatever, it can be kind of easy to to determine what is being collected and remitted by those anchors. So we just would want to steer clear of that one.
In the highway fund, you mentioned back in capital outlay that you're not including any of the bridge repairs. What is the reasoning for that? Or you have other revenue sources in mind? Or
yeah, Chair Mason, members of the commission, we do have, we're still trying to wrap our arms around potential solutions there. And I was actually talking with our public works director and town engineer yesterday, in fact. He was hoping to get us something by the end of this week. We've got some different options there. We wanted to really kind of solidify those before we loaded them in. Obviously, it's a challenged forecast, so whatever we load in on that front is just going to exacerbate or cause more challenges, but not trying to hide anything, but we're trying to present a very as accurate as we can, a good forecast that we can stand behind. So
you were budgeting for the Rancho Festoso reserve $200,000 for maintenance. Do you have the other cost of doing all the upgrades, is that going to be in the five-year plan?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, this one's going to be, it remains to be seen as to what that looks like moving forward. Certainly, council, a couple months ago, approved $2 million for next year to make improvements to the preserve. I think it's, this one's going to be dependent upon resources available and what that looks like. And, I think it's going to have to be something that's chipped away at over time. So we do have kind of a minimal amount, $200,000, of upkeep and things of that nature, but no significant capital improvements or capital investments beyond next fiscal year. But that, again, the 10-year CIP, that is something that, as we go through the budget process, we will get council's input and suggestions on, so that that could change. But
okay, thank you. Are there any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. It's time for the council liaison, Mayor Winfield.
Thank you, Chair Mason, commissioners. I hope it's not news to you that we're in our 50th year anniversary in the town of Oro Valley, and we've recently had some events on April 6th, the parade on April 13th, a community-wide celebration at James D. Creek Park. Park staff did an incredible job in organizing those. It was Parks and Recreation were carried the weight of a lot of that, and also the Oro Valley Police Department. I hope you had an opportunity to participate as a spectator or involved in one of those. This month is actually the, it was 50 years ago this month that the town was incorporated. And there's some wonderful resources on the town's website that help to continue with the celebration. There's articles, there's videos, there's podcasts. So I encourage you to take advantage of those. I see the vice chair has her Path Forward shirt. that's also underway. And you may or may not know, but there were 3,000 folks that responded to the survey. We have, I think it's maybe 6,000 comments to date, far exceeding on both accounts earlier community input and the previous general plan. So my hat's off to Renee Malini and Beyer, who are kind of the banner wavers for the Oro Valley Path Forward. So those are some of the things that have occurred recently, and so I encourage you to be a part of all these wonderful things that are happening. So thanks.
Thank you, Mayor Winfield. Any other comments or anything to discuss?
May I ask you a question, please?
Sure.
How could I get one of those T-shirts?
I volunteer. It's for the volunteers. So if you were going to volunteer at one of their Path Forward booths, and then you wear the shirt at the booth.
Okay, so it's time to adjourn. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
A second.
Yes, have a motion approved by Commissioner LeMay. Went blank. Seconded by Vice Chair Carr. All in favor?
Aye.
Passed unanimously. Thank you very much. Closed at 6:03.